Today's shiur is Masechta Ksuvos Daf Mem Dalet, and we will begin on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, three lines from the top, Omamar. In the previous shiur, Rav Huna had taught us that if a woman presents two ksuvos with different dates and different amounts of money, the example the Gemara gave was that one ksuba, the first ksuba, had an amount of 200 zuz, the second ksuba had an amount of 300 zuz. So Rav Huna taught us, Iboy behagavya, Iboy behagavya. She could choose either of these two ksubas to use to collect with. And as we had learned in the previous year, each one of these ksubas carries with it a plus and a minus. The first ksuba, which is written with the earlier date, and as we described, the halacha is that the ksuba document creates a lien on the husband's property, that he owes that money to the wife if the marriage is to terminate from the date of the ksuba. So the advantage of the earlier ksuba is that the lien was created at an earlier date, and therefore all properties that he owned at the earlier date are already mortgaged to the ksuba. But the disadvantage of that ksuba is that it's a lesser amount. The advantage of the second ksuba is that it's a larger amount, it's 300 zuz, but the disadvantage is that it's a later date, and therefore if the husband had sold properties between the date of the first ksuba and the date of the second ksuba, those properties are not mortgaged to the ksuba. And that's what Rav Huna said. Iboy b'haygavya, iboy b'haygavya. She can choose which ksuba to use with all the advantages and disadvantages as just described they bring along with them. Says the Gemara, Lema, it seems that pleaded Rav Nachman. The Rav Huna's opinion is in disagreement with what Rav Nachman said. Dom Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman holds shnei shtaris hayoytzim bezachazeh, two shtaris, two documents that are identical but with different dates, one date dated later than the other. Bitel sheinis arishin, the second shtar nullifies the first shtar, and we only follow the second shtar. Rav Huna, who gives us the choice of which shtar to follow, seems to be arguing with Rav Nachman. Says the Gemara, lav mi itmer lo, didn't we learn regarding Rav Nachman? Amra papa, umayd Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman agrees. The oisa by dikla, if the second shtar adds something more, there's another tree in the field that was sold or given in the second shtar that's not indicated in the first shtar. It's a proof, letoisus kasvei, that he wrote the second shtar because he wanted to indicate that he's adding more property to this transaction, and therefore the second shtar is not considered a contradiction to the first shtar, and that it should supersede the first shtar. Similarly here, Hachinami, in the case that we described regarding the ksubas, Ha'oisef Lamidi, the second shtar, the second ksuba represents and it contains something that the first ksuba does not contain. As we discussed, it has a larger amount of money, and therefore even Rav Nachman would agree that this is not a situation where the second shtar cancels the first shtar. Machloikas Rishonim, the Gemara is teaching us, Rav Papa is teaching us, that if the second shtar contains an extra tree that wasn't in the first shtar, then we don't say that the two shtars, that the second shtar cancels the first shtar. So now that Rishonim discuss, how do we look at these two shtars? In other words, if we have a shtar that Reuven sold to Shimon his property, dated Rosh Chodesh Nissan, the second shtar dated Rosh Chodesh Iyar has the same property plus the tree. So the question is, how do we view these two shtaris? Some Rishonim seem to say, similar to the case of Ksuba, the buyer now has a choice to choose which shtar does he want to follow. Does he want to follow the first shtar, which has the advantage that it has an earlier date, but it has the disadvantage, it has a smaller amount of property. Or he could choose to follow the second shtar that has the plus, that has more property in it, but it has the minus that it's a later date. But again, those Rishonim say a choice has to be made. Other Rishonim say that this situation is not similar to the situation of the Ksuba, and here both Shtaris stand. And therefore the halacha will be that the first Shtar will be valid for all of the property listed in it, and that will be the date for all of that property, and the second Shtar will be valid that the for the extra property, the lien will only become initiated from the date of the second Shtar. The Rishonim also discuss the Al Gemara, Rav Nachman's halacha that we're going to discuss more Mitzvah Shem in a moment, that the two Shtaris, if they're identical, we say that the second Shtar supersedes the first Shtar, is only by Shtar Mechor, Shtar Matana, when one sold a property or gave a property as a piece of gift, as a gift, where there we say that one of the Shtaris must be invalid. And says Rav Nachman, if the second Shtar doesn't add anything past the first Shtar, we say the second Shtar supersedes the first Shtar. What would be, however, the halacha if there are two Shtari Halva, two documents that indicate that Reuven borrowed money from Shimon with the exact same amount of money, let's say $1,000 Shtar 1 and $1,000 Shtar 2, but there are different dates in those Shtaris. So most Rishonim say that it's very common for people to lend money to a person and then lend money again. So even though these two shtaris, besides for the dates, are identical, do not represent the same transaction, they represent two different transactions. However, quotes the Ritva from the Yerushalmi, in order to avoid any confusion, where we have two documents that say Reuven borrowed from Shimon the same amount of money, that we should be concerned it represents the same loan, the smart thing to do is to write in the second loan document clearly that this represents a new loan and it's not the same loan that already exists between these two individuals. Gufa continues the Gemara in explaining Rav Nachman's opinion. Amar Rav Nachman, Shnei Shtaris Hayotzim Zachazeh, if we have two documents that have two different dates, one dated than the later, with the same transaction, the halacha is bitel shenis rishon. The second document cancels the first one. And it says in that Rav Papa, or my Rav Nachman agrees, the oisa by dikla, that if there's something new added in the second shtar, l'chtoisvus kasvei is written for that addition, and it doesn't represent a nullification of the first shtar. Along the same lines, the Sefer Shara Mishpat says, let's say we have a document that's a document of sale, but included in the sale is that the buyer owes the seller money, and there's a heter iska attached to that shtar to allow the buyer, to allow the seller to receive interest on the money that the buyer owes him. And that heter iska is expiring. The heter iska of the first shtar is expiring, and that's why a second shtar with a extended heter iska is included. That again, says the Sefer Shara Mishpat, is not considered that the two shtaris are identical, and we have Rav Nachman's point that then the second shtar will cancel the first shtar. Rather, it certainly represents an addition, like Moshe by Dikla, and the two shtaris remain valid. Says the Gemara, Pshita, it's also obvious. Rishim Amech V'Sheni Matana. And we have the same parcel of land. The first one, the first shtar says that this parcel of land was sold, and the second shtar says that it was given as a gift. L'yapis kaychu de kosovlei. It's obvious that the reason that the second shtar was written is not to cancel the first shtar, but rather it was to enhance the first shtar. Mishum Dina de Bamitzra, because there's a halacha of Dina de Bamitzra. The halacha of Bamitzra, as we will learn, is the pasuk says, "Va'sisa ha'yosher atoiv." A person has to do what's right. So if I have a property to sell, my neighbors, the Bamitzras, have right of first refusal. The reasoning being, my neighbor wants to buy a piece of property, and somebody else wants to buy a piece of property. For my neighbor, it's so much more advantageous to buy the piece of property which is already next to the property that he has, versus for this other person that's buying a piece of property which isn't near his land, so it makes more sense to sell it to my labor, and he has right of first refusal, known as Bar Metzra. However, the halacha of Dina Bar Metzra only applies by Mecher, not by Matana. By gift, it doesn't apply, because if I want to give somebody my piece of property as a gift, there, that person who's receiving the property, we can't tell him, well, you get your gift elsewhere. You get the gift where you got the gift. And there is no halacha Bar Metzra. And therefore, says the Gemara, if the first document indicates that it's a Mecher, and the second document indicates that it's a Matana, it's a clear situation that the reason the Shtar was written because of Bar Metzra, and the second Shtar doesn't nullify the first Shtar. And as Tosfos explains the Gemara, now the person who received the property will make a decision. Which Shtar does he want to use? Does he want to use the first Shtar, which gives him an earlier date, but puts him at risk at a Din Torah of Bar Metzra? Or does he follow the second Shtar, which protects him from a Bar Metzra Din Torah, but, on the other hand, is a later date? And Tosfos goes on to say, and the Shtar that's not to his advantage to use, he should be Matzniya. He should put away and not present in court. Ask the Prisha, and this is the halacha as quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Ask the Prisha, is this honest that he has a Shtar? The neighbor is taking him to Din Torah, and he has a Shtar that does represent the Shtar Mecher, and he's going to hide it just to be able to win the Din Torah? So the Prisha answers that since every Mecher could theoretically be turned into Matana, I could go give the person money and then say, give me the field as a matana. So it's not really considered something dishonest. The Nesivus takes a different approach. The Nesivus says, certainly, it is a dishonest thing to hide a shtar. He says, and the person who received this property has to be honest with himself. And he has to recognize what was the intention of the person who sold or gave him the property. If his intention was only for harama, to help him avoid a din Torah with a neighbor, so he has to be honest and show both shtaris, and if he loses the field, so be it. But if he truly knows that the intention was to give it to him as a gift, and therefore there is no claim by Metzra, and the only reason he's not going to show the Shtar Mecher is because he doesn't want to go through the trouble of a Din Torah, that's not called being dishonest, because he himself knows the truth, and that's why Tosfos suggests that he's allowed to hide the Shtar Mecher. Says the Gemara, furthermore, Kol Shekein, certainly in a situation of Rishim Matana v'Sheni v'Mecher, that the first Shtar is a Shtar Matana and the second Shtar is a Shtar Mecher, the Meirim Shem Dina the Baal Chov Hu the Kosu Kain, that we say that the reason why he transferred it into being a Shtar Mecher is because he wanted to give him the right to collect from his creditors. And as the Rishonim explained the Gemara, and if a Shtar Mecher, a Shtar Matana is written and there is no Achrayis written into it, that the person giving the gift doesn't take responsibility, that if the property is taken away from the recipient, he won't have any claim. If it's not written in, then he doesn't, because it was a gift. I don't have to take more responsibility. I already gave you a gift. Shtar Mecher, when I sell you something, the halacha is that even if achrayis, even if the responsibility that I carry, that there's a lien on my properties, on all of my properties, is not written in, we assume a tchrayis to soifehu. It was an error. It was in error that it was omitted. That is the advantage of a shtar mecher over a shtar matana. So certainly in a situation where this first shtar was a shtar matana, didn't have any achrayis included, and the second shtar was a shtar mecher, which has an achrayis, Rav Nachman will agree that these two shtars are both valid. The second shtar doesn't cancel the first shtar. Ella, when does Rav Nachman say his halacha? Shneim b'mecher, shneim matana. Both shtars are shtari mecher. both shtar and matana. Where their halacha is bitul shenius arishin, the second shtar cancels the first shtar. My tama, ask the Gemara, what is the reason for Rav Nachman's psak? Says the Gemara, Rafram Omar, Eimer Adoya Dele, by having the same transaction recorded in a second shtar, the recipient is essentially admitting that this shtar was written fraudulently, and that this second shtar is the correct version. Rav Achama, Eimer Chule Achle L'Shabudei. The recipient waived the lien from the date of the first shtar and established the second shtar. There's a machlokes rishonim exactly what are the mechanics. Doesn't mean that he has a right to waive the lien from the first shtar and put it on to the second, to the later date, or does it mean as if the entire transaction took place at the date of the second shtar? There are rishonim. We're not going to learn the Gemara necessarily that way, that there's not necessarily a machlokes completely between Raphram and Rav Acha. Raphram agrees, Rav Acha agrees with what Raphram said, just he went a step further. We're not going to learn the Gemara that way. It's the opinion of the Ramban. Says the Gemara, Mai Benayu, what is the nafkamina between Raphram's explanation and Rav Nachman's din versus Rav Acha's explanation and Rav Nachman's din? Ikvenayu Risadayu. Are the witnesses disqualified? According to Raphram, the recipient is saying that the witnesses were fraudulent. The shtar was fraudulent, and the witnesses who assigned to it are possible. And as the Rishonim explained, we have to be careful when we say that the witnesses are possible. We don't mean to say the Rishonim, that the witnesses are possible entirely. Just because the recipient, so to speak, is saying that these witnesses did something wrong, he doesn't have the power to completely disqualify them. Taisha says his ability will be limited to this shtar or to any other shtaris that he wrote that these edim are on, but it doesn't affect the rest of the world. In fact, the Ritva goes a step further, and he says that shtaris that were written after the state with the signature of these witnesses will also not be necessarily, and even though he wrote them, will not necessarily be disqualified, because at that point the Edom could have done tshuva. I sort of say for Shar Mitzion Balocha takes this concept in the same concept regarding another halacha. The halacha is if someone comes to Bezdin and says that there's a shaykhit that did something inappropriate and should be removed from this important position of being a shaykhit, he's a person that's a Erechad, he's not believed. Says the Shar Mitzion Balocha, that's only as far as the world is concerned. He doesn't have the ability to say that this person is a possible Shaykhit. But as far as he's concerned, since he's saying that this Shaykhit is disqualified, he would not be allowed to eat from the Shechita of this Shaykhit. Another Nafkamina is Lishlumi Peri. Repayment of fruits eaten by the recipient in the time between the date of the first shtar and the date of the second shtar. According to Raphram, who's saying that he's admitting that the first shtar was worthless, so he had no right to eat produce that was grown on this property, and if he did, he would have to repay the seller. According to Rav Acha, he was meichel the shivud, but he's not saying that the shtar is, that there was no transaction, and he's allowed to eat the fruits, and he doesn't have to repay for it. Or Lataska, who has to pay the property tax? According to Raphram, the seller has to pay the property tax because only the second shtar is valid, and until then it belonged to the seller. According to Rav Acha, it really belonged to the recipient from the date of the first shtar. It's only from when does he have a lien on the seller's property, and therefore he's responsible to pay the property tax on this property. The Ramban gives two more nafkaminas. One nafkamina is, what will be the halacha if the second shtar is declared posel? The edim or whatever else make the second shtar posel. According to Raphram, he has no shtar at all now, because he's admitting that the first shtar is worthless, and now the second shtar being worthless, he has no shtar. However, according to Rav Acha, even if the second shtar gets disqualified, the first shtar is still valid. It may not have created a lien, but it's still valid, and he still has a shtar. Or, another nafkamina, he says, if in the second shtar there's only half the amount of property as in the first shtar. If, according to Rafram, he'll only have a right to demand that smaller parcel of land. According to Rav Acha, he maybe will only have a lien on a smaller parcel, but ownership will have on the entire parcel because he did not disqualify the first parcel. As the Gemara might have a lot of ksuba, going back to what we discussed at the end of yesterday's shir, where the Gemara asked Migva Mei Miskavya, at what point is the ksuba collectible? At what point does it create a lien? Tosh Mad Amr Rav Yehuda Meshmu Meshum Rav Elezer Rav Shimon Mona Masayim and Erison. The basic ksuba is collectible from the time of Erison. For Taisvus, the extra part Amin and Nesuin. The Chamayim and the Chum disagree, and they say Echad Zev Echem and Nesuin, both are collectible from the time of Nesuin. For Hilchasun, that is indeed the Halacha. Echad Zev Echad Zev and Nesuin, both of them are from the time of the Nesuin. However, as Tosfos and most Rishonim explain the Gemara, the situation here is where at the time of Erison, a ksuba wasn't written. There was only a Tanai Bezdin, as we explained in the previous year. And at the time of Nesuin, the ksuba was written. That's when the Chachamim say it's only collectible from the time of the Nesuin. But if the ksuba was actually written at the time of Erison already, then even the Chachamim would agree that it's collectible from the time of Erison. Our Mishnah and the following Gemaras begin now to discuss the halachas of a Moitzi Shemra. The halacha is, the Torah speaks about a parasha of Moitzi Shemra, which means, if an Eishes Ish, if a married woman, has an adulterous relationship, the halacha is, she's mechuyev misa, and the misa is misas chenik, strangulation. However, the Torah speaks about a very specific situation, and that is a nara hamuresa. If a girl who's a nara and she's a mureses and she has such a adulterous relationship, her din is that she's mechuyev skila. And as we will learn, this could happen in a number of ways. Either Adam could come and say that this woman had an adulterous relationship while she's a moresis. She's mechuyev skila. The skila is administered either, as we will learn, at Shari Ir, at the gate of the city, or at the Shar Bezdin. But then there's another case which is known as the case of the Moitzi Shemra. Moitzi Shemra is a man marries a woman, has nesuin, and comes to Bezdin the next morning and says that Lematsosi Labitcha Psulim, your daughter was not a psula. She had a relationship when she was a moresis. If what he's saying is true, the girl is Mechuyev Misa Skila, and the Skila is given at the Pesach Beis Aviyah, at the entrance to her father's home. Ru'u Gidulim Shigidaltem, saying, look at what a child you raised. If, however, it turns out that this man and the Edim that he brought saying that she had this relationship were liars, the Edim were Edim Zomimim, they said that we know she did this, and then they become Edim Zomimim, you weren't with us. So Edim Zomimim amchuyu skila, vasisim loy kashazomim lasis lochiv, they wanted that she should get the skila, they in turn will get the skila. And he has the following punishments, three punishments. Number one, he's mechuyev to give knas of meya kesef, 100 kesef. He's subject to receiving malchus, and he veloy siya leisha, he remains with her as a wife. Says the Mishnah, hagiyoris in his gaira biti ima. If there's a giyoris that became a giyoris with her daughter becoming a giyoris with her, vizinza. And then this daughter was mezana as a nara hamuresa, harei zubechenik. Since she didn't have a father, because we know that the halacha is katan shenizgayer, only a bas yisrael who's a full-fledged bas yisrael has this special din of skila. and therefore she's not subject to skila, she's subject to chenik. Anyway, Pesach Beis Av, furthermore, she's not subject to the dinim of being taken to the entrance of her father's house. V'loi me'yasela, and the knas that we just described, that if the husband was mochi shemra on her, he has to pay me'yasela, doesn't apply to her, nor do the other halachas say to Rishonim of Malkus or her needing to remain with him. The Rishonim ask, why does the Mishnah have to describe a situation of a Goyorish and his Gaira beat the Ima, that the girl became a Goyorish together with her mother? The point is that she's a Goyorish. So Tosfos asked this question, and a number of answers are given. One answer is that this Goyorish that we're describing has to be a girl who's under 3 years old. Because if she became a Goyorish when she's above 3 years old, as we learned earlier in our Masechta, she's considered a Ba'ula. And certainly all of these halachas don't apply. So it has to be a girl who's very young. A girl who's so young obviously only became a Goyorish together with her mother. Another pshat along the same lines, say to Rishonim, is that Beis Din will not even entertain the Goyorish of such a young girl unless one of her parents bring her for Geiris. Another pshat that Ritva says, since we're going to learn later in the Mishnah about her Rosa Veledosa B'Kedusha, we look at when she was conceived, about certain Geiris when they were conceived, certain Geiris when they were, what was the status when they were born, so we speak about here also her mother. Rabbi Kivega also makes another point based on a Gemara that we learned on Daf Yud Aleph, that the Gemara says that a girl who becomes a Goyorish as a child has the opportunity when she becomes a Gedoyla to refuse that Geyorish. Says Rabbi Kivega, our Mishnah is referring to the situation that perhaps even though she did the Geyorish when she was young, and this act that happened was while she was young, but it's already after the time that she affirmed that she wants to be Jewish. Because if she didn't have that affirmation yet, she may not be a Jew at all, and all these halachas obviously don't apply. Continues the Mishnah. If she was conceived, her mother wasn't yet a Goyorish, but when she born, her mother was a Goyorish. She's considered like any other Jewish girl, and she's Mechuyev Skila. However, Pesach Beis Av, the halacha that she is stoned at the entrance of a parent's home doesn't apply. V'loy me'yasela, nor if there's a situation of Moitzi Shemra, there is no requirement of me'yasela. Hoysa rosa v'leidos b'kedusha, if a situation was that she was completely born with Kedusha, harei ki Yisrael chodvreah, that she's considered a full-fledged Jewish girl, and all the regular halachas apply. Continues the Mishnah. If we have a girl, the yesh la'av, that has a father, however, ve'en lo pesach ve'sav, her father doesn't own a house. And as the Miri says, her father lives somewhere. Well, Shat that he doesn't own a house. So as the Miri explains, he owns a house, he rents apartment, but he doesn't live in the house. And as Rav Yoshev explains what the Miri is saying, and the owner, the landlord of the house, says that he doesn't want that in front of his home such a story where a girl is stoned should take place. Says Rav Yoshev, let's say the landlord is amenable that the stoning should take place at the entrance of his house where this girl's father lives, then there would be skila in front of the house. Or, says the Mishnah, Yesh la pesach beis av, her father's family owned a home. And the Birkas Avram says, from here we see, but the father's not alive. So what pshat pesach beis av? She doesn't have a pesach beis av if elo av, her father's no longer alive. Says the same Birkas Avram, we see that the yarshim, the ears of the father, completely take over the position of the father. But here our father's no longer alive. Harei zu beskila. She's still mechuyev skila, because leinema pesach beis av. When the Torah said that the skila should take place at the pesach beis av, it was only lemitzvah, but not that the skila is crucial. As Tosfos, we know that many times the Torah, when it says that that something should take place, and if all of the conditions can't be met, the halacha is that we don't follow what the Torah says. Yet here, we're finding in our Mishnah that even though not all of the conditions could be met, for example, she doesn't have a father, her father doesn't have a home, yet she's still mechuyev skila. Ask Tosfos, why? If not all of the conditions could be met, why should that halacha, why should we not say that all of the halachas do not apply? Answers Tosfos that there's an extra word, umesa, to teach us that she's mechuyev skila even if all the other conditions cannot be met. However, I saw from the Sefer, the Ravya, another teretz, very nice teretz. He says that there are two separate dinim. There's a din that a nara humurasa, who has such a relationship, is mechuyev skila. There's another din, a pesach beis av, which, as we said in our introductory remarks to the Mishnah, is because of ru'u gedulim shegidaltem. Look at what you raised. Says the Ravya, these are two separate concepts, not necessarily connected. And therefore, the girl can be subject to Misa, even though we can't be Mekayim, Pesach, Beis, or Av. The Rechroinim ask, why does our Mishnah have to teach us this halacha, that the Pesach, Beis, Av is not essential to being able to be Mekayim the Chiyuv Skila? We should learn it from the beginning of the Mishnah, because the beginning of the Mishnah spoke about the girl who's a Geyoris. Then, and the Mishnah taught us that if Tairasa Veleidasa Bekedusha, that she was a Geyoris, her mother was a Geyoris before she was born, but her father is not, she has all the dinim of Yisrael, so there won't be Pesach Beis Av either. So we already see from the beginning of the Mishnah that there is no din of Pesach Beis Av. Why does the Mishnah have to repeat it? So the Chronim answer, and we'll discuss this more as we get deeper into the Perek, Be'ezer Hashem, that when the Skila is not administered at Pesach Beis Av, it doesn't always mean that it's administered at the same place. Sometimes it's administered B'Sharei Ho'ir, at the entrance to the city, and sometimes it's administered at Sharei Bezdin, at the entrance to the Bezdin. And therefore we can't learn one halacha from the other. Says the Gemara, Menani Mili, from where we know that if a girl, a Nara Marasa, was conceived as a non-Jew, but she was born as a Jew, she's subject to Skila. Amresh Lakisht Amakro Vemesa. The Torah adds the word Memesa to teach us this halacha. Ask the Mefarshim, how do we see from the word Umesa that she's Mechuyev Skila? As the Meshech Chachma asks, many times when the Torah says V'sikaltem b'avonim v'mesu, we should kill the people, v'mesu, they should die. And the Gemara doesn't use that word mesu as an extra word. Why over here, all of a sudden, does the Gemara consider it an extra word available for a drasha? So he answers that the Gemara is making a very interesting deek in the Pesukim. When the Pasuk speaks about the man receiving his punishment, the Pasuk says, V'lokhu ziknei ho'ir. However, regarding the chiyuv skila of the girl, the Pasuk doesn't say, V'sokhu ziknei ir. It says, V'sikluwa anchi ira. What does it say? A different word, anchi ira, the people of the city. To teach us that when it comes to the killing of the woman, we don't need to have her family. All we need is anchi ira. And therefore, even though this girl doesn't have a father, because who's considered a father, Gershon's guy, she is still considered v'saklua v'saklua ziknei ira, and she's mechuyev misa. Ihachi asked the Gemara, if we're including such a woman to these halachas, milka nami lulki, or mei sal nami l'shalem, all the halachas of Maitzi Shemra ought to apply. And says the Gemara, Amakrav Mesa, Lemisa Nisrapsa, it only is referring that she's Mechuyev Misa, but all the halachas of Knas do not apply. Ask the Gemara, Veimel Rabbis, Hayrosa Veleidosa Bekedusha. Maybe what the Pasuk is only referring to is a girl who both was conceived and born with Kedusha. But how do we know that if she was Hayrasa shalai b'kedusha. V'leidasa b'kedusha. She's still considered a Jewish girl that's mechuyev skila. Answers the Gemara. Hayi yisra ma'al yisahi. A girl who was hayrasa v'leidasa b'kedusha is considered full-fledged Yisrael, and for her we don't need a pasuk. Ask Taisvis that we learned the Masechta Yevamis that for Chalitza, someone who was not Hayrasa V'Leidasa B'Kedusha cannot perform the Chalitza, be not part of the Bezdin. And all of a sudden here we're saying that it's that a Hayrasa V'Leidasa B'Kedusha is considered a full-fledged Yisrael. Answers Taisvis. A ger cannot be a dayan, because the pasuk says mekarev achecha, somebody who's like a checha, who is born as a Jew. So if there's an extra pasuk, it must be coming to teach us that even though he's a ger, hayrasa v'leidasa b'kedusha, he's still disqualified as a dayan. Here we have no such reason to say it, and therefore a geyorus who hayrasa v'leidasa b'kedusha is considered a full-fledged Jew. Ask the Gemara, v'emel rabbis. If we're saying that the pasuk is coming to include someone, maybe it's even coming to include somebody who was hayrasa v'leidasa shlei b'kedusha, that's mechuyev skila. And says the Gemara, and came b'Yisrael ma'hanilei. The pasuk did add the word b'Yisrael, come exclude someone. It must be coming to exclude this person. Amar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, ha'maitzi shemra al yisayma. If someone is maitzi shemra on yisayma, he's potter. He's not chayiv to pay the fine. Shanama, the nosnal avi hanara, it should be paid to the avi hanara. Prat lazu shein la'av, it comes to exclude a girl who has no father. And the Tosfos Rid asks, it's a little difficult to understand the Gemara. As we said in our introductory remarks, the Maitzi Shemra takes place after she's already a nesua. So why is her father relevant? As we so many times have learned, a nesua is completely out of the jurisdiction of a father. Answers the Tosfos Rid that one pshat that he gives is because she's still a young girl. She just got married as a nara, and she was a nara not long ago. So as a nara. So since she's a young girl, her father is the one that has to watch her money. And since her father has to watch her money, that's why, if she doesn't have a father, perhaps she's not, Rabbi Yossi holds, she's not subject to the fine. Another pshat, following what we've been discussing, is that a very important part of this process of the Maitzi Shemra is because Ru Gedulim Shigdaltem, we say, look at what a family you brought up, and therefore the father's existence is crucial to our receiving the Knas. Master Rabbi Yossi Bar Ovin Vitaim Rabbi Yossi Bezvido, the Pasuk says, by Mefata, we learned that the Gemara teaches us that the Yisayma is subject to Knas. Divrei Rabbi Yosi Aglili. So why are we learning now that she's not subject to Knas? Who Moitzav Lava, who Mefarak Lava? So he responds, Ba'alav Acha Nisyasma. In a situation where he had relations with her, where she was not an orphan, and then she became a Yisayma, everybody will agree that she's subject to Knas. Our Gemara is referring to a situation, Rabbi Yossi's halacha is referring to a situation where she was a yisoima when she was mezana. And that's when the Gemara is saying that she has different halachas. And as the Rishonim say, even if she became a yisoima before the Din Torah commenced, it wouldn't make a difference. As long as she wasn't a yisoima at the time of the actual time that she had relations, she's subject to the knas. Rav Amar, chayiv. She's chayiv. Mimai midatani ami besulis Yisrael v'loy besulis gerim. Since we learned that a besulis Yisrael is subject to knas, not besulis gerim. Iami b'shlom kai gavna b'Yisrael mechayiv. Now every geyoris is essentially a yisayma, because as we've been describing, gerishin is gaik katan shenol dami. So if we say that Yisrael is, even though she's a yisayma, she's subject to receiving the knas. We say the ger is different. Eliam b'Yisrael ke gavna potter. That a Yisrael who doesn't have a father is not subject to knas. Has to be Yisrael potter. Even though she's a full-fledged Jew, just her father is not alive, she's excluded from receiving knas. The gerim, which halachically, she's not considered to have a father, Mabaya, is there reason to tell us that she's excluded? So must be that a Yisoyme is subject to receiving a knas. Omer Rish Lakish says Rish Lakish, Hamaiti Shemra al Ktana, if somebody's Maiti Shemra al Ktana Pata, Shinemar, Venosnu Lavi Hanara, the Torah says that they should give the fine to via Nara. Nara Mole Dibar Kosov. The word Nara is spelled Mole with a hey at the end of the letter, at the end of the word. And as we learned earlier in the previous parak, wherever the Torah spells the word Nara with a hey, it means a full fledged Nara. If it's spelled without the hey, it's a Ktana. Maskler of Achabar Abba asks Rav Achabar Abba, Tam the Kosaba Nara. Only because the Torah says Nara, are we excluding a Ktana? Halav Hachi, if not for that, Hava Min Afil Ktana, I would say that even a Ktana is subject to the Halachis Haksiv. How can we say that? Vim Omas, Vim Emes Hoyo Adover, Hazeh, Lo Nimtz Psulim Lo Nara, Voitzias Nara Pesach Vesav Yivis Kluo, Ktana La Bas Oinchen Hi. So how can we ever even have a Havamina that by Ktana is a Parasha Moitzi Shemra? The Rishonim have difficulty understanding Rav Acha. Even though correct, the wife, if she's a Ktana, is not subject to the Halachas, because she's still a Ktana, she's not a Bas Oinchim, but why would that exclude the husband who was Moitzi Shemra? So the Shita Mekubetza says that Rav Acha understands that the husband is not only penalized for defaming his wife's character, but he's also penalized for trying to have her executed. So says Rav Acha, this girl is not going to be executed, and therefore he should not be given this approach. He should not be subject to the fine. The Mishnah Lamelech takes a different approach. He says that the Torah means to say that only when something bad, because there's a drasha of Venosnu Lavi Hanara, and Rav Acha is saying that the two are connected to each other, and if they're not connected to each other, if she's not going to be chayiv, he cannot be chayiv. Others want to suggest that the reason Rav Acha, some Sofer discusses this, the reason Rav Acha wanted to say that he would not be chayiv if she was a ktana, because pitu ktana oinasi, every time a ktana has relations, it's considered an oinas, and therefore it's not that he should not be chayiv these punishments. But the Mefarshim take issue with that. We've discussed this previously. Pitu ktana oinasi is only regarding a status as an anusa or not anusa, but that doesn't mean that if a man was mafata girl, or man had relations with a minor, it's always considered an oinus. El kan nara, says the Gemara, what Rav Shlokish meant to say is, here the Torah says nara, and here the Parsha Moitzi Shemra only applies to a girl who's a gedayla. Hakom makom shenema nara, where the Torah spells the word nara without the hey at the end of the letter. From here we learn that a filik tana b'mashma and includes a ktana. And this comes to teach us to call a Torah kula, how to understand the word nara, differentiate when it has a hey at the end, it means only a gedayla, and when it doesn't have a hey at the end, it means even a ktana.